Pod Save America is brought to you by SimpliSafe. The big tech companies treat your personal data like scalp tickets in the parking lot outside of the Super Bowl. SimpliSafe, on the other hand, is an independent company not owned by big tech, so their only mission is protecting your home, not selling your data to the highest bidder. It's security that protects your privacy as much as your safety. Right, John?
That's right. You nailed it.
And you know this personally.
That's right. I set up SimpliSafe, and it was incredibly easy to do, and I highly recommend it.
No big tech owns you, that's for sure.
Not yet.
With SimpliSafe, you can customize your system to fit your needs. It ships fast directly to your door. The app-guided setup is simple, and there's no drilling required. So you can install and arm your system in under an hour. SimpliSafe is more than just a security camera. It's a comprehensive system of sensors, indoor and outdoor cameras, and 24/7 professional monitoring. It's backed by SimpliSafe's 24/7 professional monitoring agents who dispatch emergency help when you need it. Over 5 million people value and trust SimpliSafe with their home security every day. Right now, our listeners will get 50% off a new system when you sign up for professional monitoring, and your first month is free. Just visit simplisafe.com/crooked. That's half off at simplisafe.com/crooked. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
I'm Dan Pfeiffer. For years, I've heard from candidates, activists, and political staffers who turn to Pod Save America for political strategy and messaging advice because they don't have access to a political consultant or a pollster. That's flattering to hear, but it's a huge problem. If we're going to defeat MAGA and protect democracy, we need everyone to have access to the best information and advice possible. That's why I recently launched MessageBox Pro, a subscription consulting product for people working at every level of politics. Subscribers get weekly strategy memos, data-driven messaging insights, and polling analysis. Plus, you get access to an incredible community of smart, committed political pros. Whether you're running for office, staffing a politician, organizing your community, or working in communications at any level, MessageBox Pro is built for you. To learn more or sign up, go to messageboxpro.com.
Welcome to Pod Save America. I'm John Favreau.
I'm John Lovett.
I'm Tommy Vietor.
On today's show, Trump says the ceasefire with Iran is on, quote, life support. We'll talk about why and what comes next as he heads off to China. We'll also talk about his new plan to make Venezuela our 51st state.
That's a perfect plan.
Perfect plan. The fallout from the Virginia Supreme Court's decision to throw out the Democrats' new maps, AOC taking on Jeff Bezos, and what she might run for in 2028, and Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy and his wife, Rachel Campos Duffy, getting back to their roots with a new reality television show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exciting.
Great.
Quick note before we start. If you're a Friend of the Pod subscriber, which if you aren't, you should be, you can now buy tickets for this year's Crooked Con. Special presale just for subscribers.
Damn right.
Just happening just for you.
May 12th. That is today when you're listening. But if you're not a subscriber because you hate pro-democracy independent media and you love listening to podcast ads, you can still buy Crooked Con tickets, but you're going to have to wait till next week, starting on May 19th.
You might get a job at CBS.
You might get a job at CBS. You might get to someday interview Bibi Netanyahu.
Bibi Netanyahu. Say, sir, why are you so great?
Yeah, that's the
only thing. Why is your leadership so impressive?
There's definitely a limited range of questions you can ask Netanyahu if you get the job at CBS versus if you interview him here at Pod Save America, which I don't think is going to happen anytime soon.
Rhodes has got an ask in.
I think we'll get Netanyahu before or after we get Biden.
Maybe actuarial question.
Anyway, either way, CricketCon is going to be a big fun party right after the midterms, November 5th through 7th. Dan yelled at me for saying big fun party because he thought that was like jinxing the midterms. I'm like, it's still going to be a big fun party even if we're going to still have a party. We're still going to live.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, what choice do we have?
Yeah, you got
gallows humor is still humor.
June in 2017.
I did.
And we don't connect.
And when Trump won, I remember telling Emily there might not be a wedding now.
Yeah. And she's like,
unrelated reasons. And then,
yeah. Will she listen? Who knows?
That did take you in through with it.
Well, Hannah won't tell her. Hannah won't tell her about that joke. Don't worry about that. 100%
anyway.
Don't put this under a comment of Emily's Instagram.
You know someone's gonna send this to her. Yeah. I'm gonna send this
to
her.
Oh, I know. I hate the snitch tagger.
It's gonna turn up at your wedding, is what it's gonna turn up. Anyway, you should go subscribe.
What are we talking about?
Become a Friend of the Pod subscriber. No ads for any of your favorite podcasts at Crooked, and you get to support Crooked Media, and you get subscriber-only shows, and you get all of our Substack newsletters. And by the way, you can start buying a ticket for CricketCon right now. They're going fast. go get it. November 5th through 7th, Washington, D.C. It's crookedcon.com, and you can become a subscriber at crooked.com/friends. All right. It appears that last week's siren emojis about the U.S. and Iran closing in on a one-page memo to end the war have given way to this week's siren emojis about Trump possibly resuming military action in Iran. Live by the siren emoji, die by the siren emoji.
Are we talking about reporters?
I mean, that's who usually gives them. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, no. Reporters do, and now also just random influencers and accounts that
steal their
don't give you any accurate information whatsoever.
It lends such kind of credibility. It does. And it starts with Drudge. The siren started Judge.
That's true.
The siren doesn't make sense as a news break.
Then reporters started doing it, and then just random influencer just, you know, trying to gather information that's not in any way, that just shows up in your For You algorithm.
People with names like Joey Bloomberg. And then they've like, Bloomberg is reporting it.
It's like, I collapsed the market for like 5 minutes.
It is all caps anyway. Anyway, all of this comes after Trump rejected Iran's response to the one-page memo. They kept telling it was one page,
it's 14 the right
points.
Length of
they
memo.
Got it all on one page. Mm-hmm. Anyway, rejected, which Iran waited 10 days to send and included demands for U.S. reparations and permanent Iranian control over the Strait of Hormuz. Trump called that, quote, totally unacceptable and inappropriate before elaborating on his initial reaction in the Oval on Monday.
I would say the ceasefire is on massive life support, where the doctor walks in and says, sir, your loved one has approximately a 1% chance of living. It's unbelievably weak, I would say. I would call it the weakest right now, after reading that piece of garbage they sent us. I didn't even finish reading it. It was just unacceptable. You know, a lot of people said, well, does he have a plan? Yeah, of course I do. I have the best plan ever. I have a plan. You know what it is? A very simple plan. I don't know why you don't say it like it is. Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon.
We need to allow the removal of all their enriched uranium.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they did it 2 days ago. They did 2 days ago. They said, you're going to have to take it. We were going to go with them. But they changed their mind because they didn't put it in the paper. I've had to deal with them 4 or 5 times. They changed their mind. They're very dishonorable people, the leadership.
Exhausting. Who would have thunk it? He's learning a lot of lessons over and over and over again. Maybe not learning them.
It drives me crazy when he says, I have a plan, Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. No, that's a goal.
Yeah,
that's what you want.
What a plan.
The plan is how you get to that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's a destination. You need a we need a route.
You need a journey.
So far as we start week 11 of the war, it doesn't seem like that plan is bearing fruit.
It's also funny that he didn't read the whole one-page memo.
Yeah, finish. Well, yeah, get to the bottom of the thing. Maybe there's some good stuff at the bottom.
What if there's some pictures?
Yeah.
Tommy, why do you think the latest deal fell apart? And what other options does Trump have at this point?
I mean, all the details weren't public, but I think that the U.S. sent over a bunch of hardline nuclear demands and the Iranians were like, nah, we just want you to stop blockading the Strait of Hormuz and give us all this shit. And that's our take. And so now we're back. So all the options are bad. I mean, he can restart the war, which is extremely unlikely to lead to regime change, but will certainly lead to economic chaos in the region. He can keep the blockade going and hope that the economic pain breaks the Iranian regime before it breaks the global economy. I don't think that's going to work either. And then he can find a way to declare victory and slink away, which seems like the most likely option. But Iran will probably control the Strait of Hormuz in that case.
I'm very interested in his how he keeps talking about the leaders in all these different ways. First, he likes the new leaders because they're better than the old leaders. They killed all the old leaders. Then he also does sometimes, we don't know who the leaders are. And then this one was, they're awful. They're dishonorable people. They're lunatics.
Yeah, it's also, we've been through so many rounds of reporting in which where Trump felt we were on the precipice of a deal and then the talks fall apart. But if you take out the spinning coming from the administration, is it possible that really they've just been far apart the whole time? Because the Venn diagram of, on one side, you have Trump requiring a deal that is better than the JCPOA, the Obama deal, because he said that deal was the worst deal ever made. On the other side, you have Iran in a stronger position than when the war began, wanting a better deal than that, including consequences to the to the U.S. reparations for the cost of the war and the power it's gained from having control of the Strait of Hormuz. Those circles don't overlap. So what are we doing here?
Yeah, exactly.
And then the reporting is so credulous, and so it feels like we're having this up and down roller coaster. But really, we're just dealing with the like kind of strategic, like reality of this stupid fucking war.
Yeah,
it sounds which bums me out personally.
Mm-hmm, same.
Well, it also sounds like, and you know, they said that they, in all these plans and proposals that Iran keeps sending back or responding to, sounds like they just want to keep control of the Strait of Hormuz.
No doubt.
And why wouldn't
they? Or
they
want sanctions relief.
Or they want
one or the other. They need a financial lifeline.
Right.
But it's also like they're sending over their maximalist position. We send over our maximalist position and then we just get mad and walk away. That's not how negotiations work. Get in a room, hash it out, give a little on each side. Maybe we can come to some conclusion. But they're just like, they're not even trying. Trump's like, I didn't read the one page memo all the way to the bottom.
Bob Kagan, the hawkish neocon, Iraq war supporting Bob Kagan, that one, just wrote a piece in the
Atlantic. Robert to me. I'm not close enough to call him Bob. I call him Robert.
Bobby, yeah.
But I call him Bobby.
Yeah.
He just wrote a piece in the Atlantic titled Checkmate in Iran that starts, it's hard to think of a time when the United States suffered a total defeat in a conflict, a setback so decisive that the strategic loss could be neither repaired nor ignored. He then ticks through every conflict since Pearl Harbor and basically makes the case that Trump's fuck up in Iran will be more consequential than all of them. What'd you guys think?
I just want to before we get into the details of it, the neocon high dudgeon of the 2000s, I still do not miss. Like, look, this is a very big blunder. I think it is a little premature to be saying it's worse than Pearl Harbor.
I thought Pearl Harbor was actually one of the easier ones because Pearl Harbor's thing was like, we came back and we won that one pretty decisively.
Sure, in hindsight, it looks pretty fucking good. But a year or so after Pearl Harbor, things were pretty up in the air.
I think we're going to go to Iraq because that one was, he was like, yeah. And then we left, then eventually we left Iraq more stable. Listen, and I'm like, oh, yeah. Did we?
A lot of yada yada there for Iraq.
That
for
was
sure.
My big note too. Like, yeah. I want to build the biggest tent possible. But his idea that Iraq was mitigated by like a strategic change and then all's well that ends well because like Saddam's not there now. That was a little much for me.
But this is all like throat clearing around what was truly a bracing and like just dismal read on the situation, including laying out like just how few options Trump has, because part of the reason he called off military strikes, wanted a ceasefire, is because of the leverage Iran had when it was striking oil and gas infrastructure in the region, how he can try to declare victory, but that still leaves the Strait of Hormuz, how like that all the options that Trump has are fucking terrible.
Yeah, they're all terrible. And also, the Israelis have also just been crystal clear that they don't think the war is over. I mean, if you watch Netanyahu on 60 Minutes, he said as much. There's also the war in Lebanon. If you want a weaker ceasefire, I could point you to one. The one in Lebanon, where they're bombing each other all the time, and there's constant fighting, like daily, there's casualties all the time. So I agree with his assessment that the Iranians are not going to give up the Strait of Hormuz unless they get sanctions relief or something like really big for it. And that we look weak and we look kind of feckless and unreliable.
It's also like the gall of Trump saying, oh, these people are dishonorable. Like you used previous talks as a smokescreen to bomb the leadership. You have ripped up the previous agreement, and you may not have liked it, but it was negotiated in good faith by the United States, whose authority came from Obama to you. So you've kind of undermined our credibility there. They have no confidence that Trump won't change his mind in a couple months and resume bombing if they accept a deal. They have no confidence that Israel won't bomb Iran if it views it in its interest, even if there is a deal. So just like the way in which we're like stuck in this morass because Trump went into this so half-cocked is just, it's just sort of gruesome, and it's when you step back and look at it.
I think there were times in this conflict where people said, I remember thinking this at one point, oh, he could end up just going back to like Obama's Iran deal, right? And then call it a victory, but it's going to be like Iran. We're like, oh, you know, you all criticized Obama for this. I think it's pretty clear now that there's no way he gets a deal that's better or even the same as the Iran deal. It's going to be worse because when the Iran deal was made, Iran didn't control the Strait of Hormuz.
No doubt.
Like this piece made me think about I knew about the strategic importance of the Strait, but just from Iran's perspective now, they've got the control. Even they get some sanctions relief, they're going to have to get a lot more sanctions relief and a lot when they're calling it reparations or whatever than they ever were before because they got the Strait. They have full control over it now. Maybe they go for a deal where they charge some tolls. Maybe they share control with other, you know, Gulf
with
nations.
The Omanis, probably.
But it seems like the scenario now where Iran willingly signs some kind of a deal where they fully give up the Strait of Hormuz and it goes back to being like an international waterway seems very slim.
There's no chance. They just got this incredible toy and they're going to play with it for as long as they want until it breaks or someone takes it away. There's just no chance. Also, it could get worse. Like if Trump decides to go back to war, the economic cost could be just a resumption of what we've seen, but also the Houthi rebels could get involved. They're in Yemen. They could start firing at ships in the Red Sea. They could choke off. You know, the Saudis have been sending a lot of their oil and gas that they can't get out through the Strait of Hormuz west through a pipeline, and then it'll get out through the Red Sea or through the Suez Canal. If the Houthis get involved and they choke off those access points too, like prices could hit $300 a barrel. It's a disaster. And also, by the way, we're not even talking about the reason we're there, which is the nuclear material, the 900 pounds of highly enriched uranium,
the
which
dust.
Sometimes it's dust, sometimes it's
the dust.
Critical
dust.
To get out. Yeah. It is still sitting in Iran, and also all of that material was enriched after Trump pulled out of the JCPOA. So it's a problem he created and now is probably not going to solve.
I like the scenario that he mentioned where we were going to go in together with the Iranians, like just a group field trip to go to dig under the rubble and to find all the nuclear dust together.
I'd go.
That's a show I'd watch. I also like, and this is Iran giving up the strait like through some negotiation. Then there's the other option of trying to take it by force, but that requires like, you know, U.S. Navy ships potentially getting fired on and Iran small boats firing on other ships too. And then Kagan points out in this piece too, even if they're not firing on the ships, they can retaliate against Gulf energy infrastructure like they did however many weeks ago before the ceasefire. So like they have plenty of options, Iran, and clearly they are fine taking a whole bunch of punishment. Because, you know, as the Trump administration likes to point out, they don't give a shit about their own people. They kill protesters, all that kind of stuff. They surely are not going to care if they're going to inflict a ton of economic pain on their country. It's not like they care a lot about their people. So, yeah, they're going to have the appetite for a lot of pain.
Yeah, that's the part that's sort of like chilling about where we're at, because we're in this sort of stalemate in which Trump looks like a loser. He can try to declare victory, but there'll still be the ongoing cost of us having kind of shown our might and Iran remaining in power and now controlling the Strait of Hormuz, or there's escalation and we've already launched a massive campaign against Iran and the regime held together. What escalation looks like, how far they'd have to go, because the next escalation is toward the regime collapsing, and that's a combination of economic pressure to squeeze them, that's more an intense military action, and like it all, and while that is happening, even if it were to happen relatively quickly, you're still talking about Iran unloading whatever it is it's willing to do in the Gulf, and so just there are terrible options in front of America's worst person.
And this was totally like Trump is a drunk guy at the bar who's been lifting a lot, who decided to pick a fight with the crazy guy who has cauliflower ear, and that guy is kicking the shit out of him and is willing to go a lot further to win this fight than Donald Trump is and take a lot more pain, and it's not going to end well.
Yeah, and by the way, you also killed his father, I guess. And there's no gold toilet for him. Like, it is like there was something someone said once a long time ago, which is like, if someone is willing to fight you, it means they have less to lose.
Yep.
And I don't think Trump ever learned that, because I don't think there's ever been a real fight.
No.
Pod Save America is brought to you by Nutrafol. Real change comes from small things you do every day that quietly add up to big improvements. That's the idea behind Nutrafol. It's built around a simple, consistent approach to hair health that works from within and delivers visible results over time, not overnight. I take Nutrafol, and basically,
You have so much hair there, I can't even see your face.
If you left it up to nature, basically, I'd be a great swimmer. You know, just like nothing. But I've used the power of modern medicine in defiance of God's will to have hair on top of my head. But even still, I noticed like 6 months ago that it was like thinning a bit. And I was like, oh, because I'm out of options. But then I started using Nutrafol and red light therapy. And the combination genuinely really brought my hair back.
Red light therapy?
Yes. The combo has been great. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand, and it's the number one hair growth supplement brand personally used by dermatologists. Nutrafol's hair growth supplements are peer-reviewed, NSF certified for sport, and clinically tested. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach. Nutrafol offers multiple formulas for men and women tailored to different life stages like postpartum or menopause and lifestyle factors such as plant-based diet, so you get support that's actually right for you. Adding Nutrafol to your daily routine is easy. Order online, no prescription needed, with automated deliveries and free shipping to keep you on track. I take the daily Nutrafol and I take the DHT inhibitor. I do it every day. It's part of my routine. And I do the red light therapy at night. And the combo, I feel like, has genuinely worked. Let your hair become one less thing taking up space in your head and see thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months with Nutrafol. And it did take the time. It did. At first, I was like, oh, no. Oh, no, my wedding. I'm f***ing back. Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off for your first month subscription and free shipping when you visit Nutrafol.com and enter promo code Crooked. That's Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code Crooked.
Pod Save America is brought to you by Rocket Money. What ridiculous subscription did you discover you were paying for? Any embarrassing doubles? Yeah, a ton of them all the time. There's a lot, there was a time where I was trying to find like a good workout app, like gives you some workouts to do.
Yeah.
And then you like sign up and you subscribe. And then suddenly it's like, there's three workout apps I never use. What am I doing?
I was paying for all these different things. At some point, I was paying for one of them twice.
Ridiculous. Rocket Money allows you to track subscriptions and cancel them within the app with just a few taps. In fact, Rocket Money has saved users over $880 million in canceled subscriptions. You can categorize automatic transactions across your accounts and customize categories with tags to help shed light on your spending patterns. Set budgets and savings goals. Rocket Money users who create a financial goal in the app save over $70 on average within the first 30 days. Get personalized insights and regular reports on your spending habits. You can even receive real-time alerts for large transactions, upcoming bills, and low balances. Consolidate your checking, savings, loans, and investment accounts into a single dashboard to give you a clear picture of your finances. You can even set automated savings with adjustable amounts and frequency. Just set it and forget it to grow toward your goals. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that helps find and cancel unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Let Rocket Money help you reach your financial goals faster. Join at rocketmoney.com/crooked. That's rocketmoney.com/crooked. rocketmoney.com/crooked. Good news, though, for all you drivers wondering if we're ever going to see $3 a gallon gas again. Trump said Monday he's considering suspending the federal gas tax.
Do it.
Which is currently about 18 cents a gallon for gasoline and 24 cents a gallon for diesel. The president said he'd suspend the tax for as long as it takes, which seems like not that long if you believe Kevin Hassett, which of course you should, who just said oil prices will drop quickly before the midterms once, quote, the gusher opens. Where is the gusher? I guess in the Strait?
It's Chuck Schumer's office now that he heard about the gas tax bill. he excites him. Sorry. Just because he loves it, you know, he does a press conference.
Yeah,
gas
no, thing. Yeah, for sure.
He's gushing.
Suspending the gas tax, good idea or great idea?
Yeah, suspend the gas tax, release all the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, get rid of all the sanctions on Iran and maybe Russia while you're at it. Just go nuts. Prices will stay high, but now we won't be able to pay for highways or mass transit. It's a great idea. Let's do it.
Yeah, we already can't pay for those things anyway. And over the last sort of half century, more and more of our roads are paid for without the gas. The gas tax is supplemental, but we still pay for it ourselves. I mean, having a gas tax is a good idea. The politics of suspending it are great. Just do it.
This is said like someone who was on Hillary Clinton's primary campaign in 2008.
Was she? I don't even remember. Were we forced?
You guys, yeah, I had to think about that too because it's like the mandate fight. Who was no? You guys, when we did the Indiana and North Carolina primaries, Hillary was saying we should suspend the gas tax, and Obama was saying that's just a gimmick, and it's bad, and we shouldn't do it, and it's not really going to affect your prices that much.
Is that when John McCain sent tire gauges to us?
That's something different.
That was when we were wanted people to check. He just suggested people check their tires. And they're like, you fucking piece of shit. We like running on these soft tires. Cushy. It's cushy. We're not going to fill up my tires, communist bastard. But the, yeah, I, look.
But the point of it is it doesn't actually bring down the price.
It's no, it's, what, it's, what is it? 18, 20, 16 to 18 cents a gallon. And then a little bit more for diesel. I mean, it's a bigger deal for truck drivers, commercial, like it does make a big difference for people in like that. But
it's also ridiculous that Trump said he would do this. Can't do it without Congress. There's some bipartisan legislation that was floating around. It might get a little more lift now that he said it, but he can't do it on his own. Or I guess he's not supposed to do it on his own. Who knows? He can try anyway. And yeah, of course, it robs the government of revenue it can't afford to lose because we have a lot of big ticket items that we need to pay for, like bombing Iran and
schools,
building a ballroom, and now apparently painting the Lincoln Memorial reflecting pool American flag blue, which along with some other repairs is apparently going to cost $13.1 million, according to David Fahrenthold at the Times. This is an apparently it's an 88% jump in the cost of what it's going to take to repaint the reflecting pool. And you know why it jumped so high? Because Donald Trump decided to give a no-bid contract to the guy who did all his pools at Bedminster.
Which is Rudy Giuliani. Hope he feels better.
It's also Spiel, like, no. they're trying to sue it to stop it. It was funny, the guy that was suing, he's like, we just look, it's a process thing, but also we just think they chose a bad color,
yeah.
which you know they did. You know it's gonna be the tackiest fucking thing.
For sure. The tackiest blue.
Like, come on, it doesn't need to look like a goddamn like Splash Mountain thing. Like, just kind of
the
like,
best blue is North Carolina blue. Let's just do that. UNC colors.
That'd be pretty bright in the reflecting pool.
I don't know. I'm just making this up. Why did Kevin Hassett always... He looks like Dennis the Menace just took down the biggest nitrous balloon you've ever seen. And then he just spouts like economic bullshit on CNBC.
It's like he spouts the best. Yeah, he's the best.
Get him out there. Get him out there.
$13 million for the reflecting pool. They're voting on the ballroom this week. Remember, that's $1 billion. That they want to add in security.
That's just a lot of security.
Did you see what...
What are we doing to that thing?
Speaking of your boy Chuck Schumer,
uh-huh.
He coined a new term for Republicans because of the ballroom. Did you see what it was?
Oh, I didn't.
No.
Ballroom Republicans. He's calling them ball. He's calling the party ballroom Republicans.
Okay.
It's not. I know it's one of those. I'm like, it's definitely not using a scalpel there. More of a sledgehammer. But maybe he throws out ballroom Republicans, and then everyone, it's like a signal, and everyone says it in a better way. But everyone knows what the message is because he
Shots me at this point last week that because this $1 billion is in the budget, they're all gonna have to vote on it, and I think that's great. It's a yes or no vote on the fucking ballroom. Terrific.
Yeah, that's good.
Terrific. The idea that
they're saying, it's security. Secret Service needs it. Well, but would they need it if they didn't have the fucking ballroom? Probably not.
Hey, but it's like you knock down the East Wing and you got to rebuild it. Did you not? Was it a different America in which there wasn't security?
Yeah.
Did you knock down a building?
Did you put that line item in the budget when you were doing up the budget for the new ballroom?
You knew what the thing was going to fucking cost. It's like it's like a football stadium where, these donors are going to have to go to the big unveiling because they're the ones responsible, but the vast majority of the cost of the taxpayers. Because if the actual kind of construction is $300 million, but securing the facility is $1 billion, costs that were inevitable and required in order to ever use it, it's a taxpayer ballroom, just 100%.
Just trying to add it up here. There's the ballroom. There's the Trump Kennedy Center.
Mm-hmm.
There's the arch. We haven't even started building the arch yet.
Well, get going.
We got the reflecting pool. They're also that UFC fight. That's gonna take some doing to put up that and take it down on the White House lawn. Now, some of this is like privately funded
landscaping.
It is, of course, it's the worst of all worlds for Trump, best of all worlds for us in the politics. But it's like some of it's being funded by major donors, corporate donors who now get special access to Trump because of their donation. And then the rest is the taxpayers foot the bill. So it's like a good mix of shady influence of corporate allies of Trump and just, you know, good old fashioned, corruption.
The reflecting pool brought to you by Raytheon. So when you're reflecting on your life, you like to think about
the
drones.
The reflecting pool wasn't a problem.
No,
like,
it was fine.
I'm open to the possibility that they could use a ballroom. I don't think it would have been my priority, right? But the reflecting pool was just doing its thing.
It was just sitting
It's
there.
Not the wrong color. It looks fine. Great. It's classic. I do think, listen, I've said this before, no offense to Steven Spielberg. I think that World War II memorial.
Oh, yeah.
This is my position, which I think is I don't want it. I don't want the final design.
Trickle down ballroom.
Did Steven Spielberg design it?
No, he was part of the class because it was part of the post Saving Private Ryan. He was helped raise money for it. He was kind of a big booster of it. I don't know exactly what his direct involvement. He's not the designer of it, but he was a big face of getting it done.
So Democrat takes over. We're going to bulldoze the ballroom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bulldoze the World War II memorial.
No. I don't want that. Listen, it stands.
You want
to
paint the reflecting. What are we painting the reflecting pool?
Is that where Jenny and Forrest Gump reunited? Was that in the reflecting pool?
Yes.
Yeah,
it is. It is.
Don't mess with that landmark.
painting the reflecting pool, kind of undoing that, that's an easy one.
All the gold on the White House.
That's coming off. That's
like
easy.
The writing on the outside of the oval. That's like that, cursive gold writing oval this way.
It's cuck lives here.
Why do you think this house needs a fucking name tag? Everyone knows what it is. That's the whole idea of it.
It'd be funny if they did a big gold, like, in this house, we believe, kind of like.
The Mar-a-Lago, Abampan, umbrellas, the yellow umbrellas, those are all going.
Those drive me crazy. It looks just like Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah, that's the
anyway. That's a silly color.
It's a long list. Well, if suspending the gas tax doesn't work and the gusher of oil doesn't open, Trump does have one
Please stop saying gusher.
Gusher.
Begging you. Yeah. It's a snack.
Gusher. it is a snack. Yes, Tommy. Trump does have one other trick up his sleeve. President told Fox on Monday that he is, quote, seriously considering making Venezuela the 51st U.S. state because there's, quote, $40 trillion in oil there and, quote, Venezuela loves Trump.
Isn't this the MAGA fever dream? Isn't he president because Joe Biden let in too many people from Venezuelan prisons? Where is Stephen Miller on this one? I don't understand. Like, I'm pretty sure.
So every person in a Venezuelan prison would become an American.
Right.
He would actually make an unprecedented number of Venezuelan prisoners.
That's quite an amnesty.
Every person in the asylum, the worst people in Venezuela would all become Americans.
It's a good question.
Uh-huh.
But I wonder if, just to play this out, if this administration, Stephen Miller, would make sure that they are second-class citizens who have to stay in Venezuela. Mm. We know how they treat the citizens of Puerto Rico right now.
Doing a little Maduro's advocate here.
Right. Yeah.
Well, they're not a member. They don't have statehood now. This is 51st state.
Well,
it doesn't matter if Trump's
need Congress.
Exactly. It doesn't matter if he's considering it. Oh, you're considering it? So am I.
You also need, I know that we don't care about international law or the UN anymore, but it's a flagrant violation of international law. The people of Venezuela would have to, of course, vote on this.
It will be a flagrant violation of international law if the Venezuelans don't choose to do it.
That's what I'm saying.
Presumably you'd have to have some sort of vote on it.
That's what
which would be lovely.
That's quite a presumption.
Also, boy, it creates a bunch of new interesting borders that presumably would also need walls for Mexico to pay for, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Also, he said that they love Trump, and I did look at some polling on this. It was in the Miami Herald, actually, a couple weeks ago. They did a big poll in Venezuela. In January, 92% of Venezuelans said they felt grateful to Trump for capturing Maduro. That was like a couple days after the capture. And a few weeks ago, it's down to 47%.
Ooh.
89% of Venezuelans reject Trump's continued backing of Rodriguez, and 78% think the country's on the wrong track under her. So
honestly, him losing support for deposing Maduro that quickly, it's actually very American to me. It's like wow, what have you done for me lately, bitch? Yeah.
I'm 100% sure that we've now officially thought about this longer and deeper than Donald Trump has.
Yeah, but for sure.
Certainly there's an easier way to just steal all their oil than to make another state.
Yeah,
that's the end game.
By the way, are we doing that now already?
The oil's not just like it's like in the Amazon. It's like very hard to access. Actually, it's a real pain.
I know. I was flirting with not talking about this at all, but we saw what happened with Greenland. NATO had military exercises in Greenland, so we got pretty close on that one.
Raphael Lemkin just wanted to shout at us about international law over here.
Yeah.
Like Amal Clooney over there.
Amal Clooney. That
I didn't get the first
one.
No.
That was very, very, yeah. Say that shit for Ben.
Yeah.
Take it to the world, Os.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pod Save America is brought to you by Helix. Sleep is so important. A good night's rest sets you up for a great day. I've had all kinds of sleep issues over the years. Brain can't stop. You know, I had a dream last night in the middle of the night that I had signed a contract that obligated me to an unlimited expense over a real estate deal involving apartment buildings. I woke up in a panic. You know, I sometimes think nightmares get a bad rap. If you have a really good dream and you wake up, it's not true. You have a nightmare and then you wake up. That wasn't
relief.
Real.
Yeah.
That wasn't real. That's a nice feeling.
That's what I've been telling Charlie.
Also.
Works with a five-year-old, works with you too.
Also a nice feeling, sleeping on a Helix mattress. I love my Helix mattress.
Which, again, Charlie also does. And we just got Teddy, a big boy bed. And guess what it is?
Is it a Helix?
It's a Helix. Another Helix in the house.
You take the Helix sleep quiz and it'll match you with a perfect mattress based on your personal preferences and sleep needs. I have the Dawn Luxe. Very comfortable. Get free shipping and seamless delivery. Helix delivers your mattress right to your door with free shipping in the U.S. The Happy with Helix guarantee offers a risk-free, customer-first experience designed to ensure you're completely satisfied with your new mattress so you can rest easy with seamless returns and exchanges. Helix offers a 120-night sleep trial and limited lifetime warranty. I'm a huge fan of Helix. It was an upgrade from my previous mattress, and I've had it for a long time, and it's great. HelixSleep.com/crooked for 27% off site-wide. That's HelixSleep.com/crooked for 27% off site-wide. This offer is exclusive to our listeners. Make sure you enter our show name after checkout so they know we sent you. HelixSleep.com/crooked.
Pod Save America is brought to you by Cook Unity. You know how I feel about Cook Unity.
We're huge fans.
In fact, I put my order in just yesterday for next week, and I was all excited because there's some new meals. that I can get. And had it last night, had it all last week. It's just great. Cook Unity is the first chef-led meal delivery service that makes your meals in small batches inside local micro kitchens across the U.S., not factories, so every dish arrives with the kind of freshness you'd get at the restaurant itself. Meals from Michelin-starred chefs, James Beard winners, and Food Network stars. In fact, when you're picking some of the meals, there's sometimes a little sign at the top that says James Beard winner. And then yes. You know that that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's how you know.
But also, there's different users rating it too.
Yeah, I like the rate. I use the ratings.
I do the ratings too.
Someone's
getting a 4.5. Yeah, absolutely.
But I've been using it for a while, and so now I have like a bunch that are just my favorites that I make sure I have like one of every week. They have a moussaka thing that is fucking excellent.
Moussaka is great. They have a lot of bowls that are very good too. Mm. Some rice in the bowl. They got some salad bowls. Cook Unity works with some of the best chefs in the country to bring creative, delicious meals to your door. There are hundreds of dishes to choose from, and the menu is updated constantly. Over 10 different dietary preferences. High protein, low sodium, GLP-1, pescatarian, gluten-free, and more. Over 25 global cuisines. Mediterranean, Korean, Thai, Mexican, Italian, and more. Taste what happens when real, award-winning chefs make fresh, small-batch meals just for you. Go to cookunity.com/crooked or enter crooked before checkout to get 50% off your first order. That's 50% off your first order by using code crooked or going to cookunity.com/crooked. All right, so Trump... Staying on this subject, Trump's about to spend some quality time this week with fellow imperialist Xi Jinping when he takes his first trip to China since 2017. Naturally, Trump will be rolling a few billionaires deep. Elon Musk and Tim Cook are joining, among others, probably because of their diplomatic skills.
Can we pause on that? Hey, Tim, you're resigning. You don't have to do this anymore, Tim Cook.
You know what?
I think Tim Cook just likes Donald Trump.
I think he's in.
I really do. I think anyone who thought Tim Cook was just like, I think Tim Cook's just a fan of Donald
Trump. I figured he just
Trump.
Liked fucking screens.
No, fuck Tim Cook. He sucks.
Okay. Wow. Hope your iPhone.
All right. Well,
hope your Apple cares.
Yeah.
All right. Care.
See you, Pride, Tim, I guess.
Okay. Anyway. So, Tommy, an Asian diplomat in D.C. told Politico they're worried that China might offer to help reopen the strait in exchange for American concessions on Taiwan. Which I'm sure if Trump read that would be like, good idea. How big of a deal would that be? How concerned are you?
I mean, I'm just skeptical that China could actually force Iran to reopen the strait and kind of go back to the before times. Because if you're like, China buys 90% of Iran's oil, but still, if you're Iran, you're thinking, look, we get a couple million worth of Bitcoin out of every boat that goes by. We find a new buyer for that oil. Like, I don't know. I'm skeptical. I asked a China expert friend about this quote in Politico, and his take was like, it would likely be more like, how can you expect me to help you with the Strait of Hormuz and not sell my Iranian friends any more weapons when you're selling weapons to the Taiwanese and giving them diplomatic cover? That could certainly happen. And Trump, I think, basically said today that Taiwan arms sales are up for negotiation, which is a huge deviation from traditional foreign policy, where that's just not a thing that is discussed with the Chinese. It's, you know, congressionally mandated law. So,
which he signed, like, right?
This is an interesting thing. Is like, I've always assumed Trump could give a shit about Taiwan. He cares insofar as losing access to their semiconductors would be an economic calamity, right?
And it would be a historic. It would be a historic ego wound.
Yeah, but like, he doesn't give a shit about freedom, democracy, human rights, religious freedom, hating communism, all the traditional like things that once animated Republicans on this. So I assume he would trade away Taiwan in a heartbeat for a good trade deal. But Xi Jinping, like, he doesn't need Trump to make some historic shift, even rhetorically. Like, I think if he gets if he hears what he wants to hear behind the scenes, that's more than enough. Like, yeah, you do what you got to do. I'm not going to go after you. I mean, so we'll see. Like, all that said, the Trump administration has greenlit huge arms sales packages to Taiwan. Now, the rub here is that those haven't been delivered yet. They're like $20 billion behind in the delivery of those weapons. But like, people like Marco Rubio is making sure that the packages get authorized. So I don't know.
And then they're going to be talking about AI a lot as well. Apparently, it seems like a good outcome on AI. It seems like it could be there's reports that they may open a channel of communication to make sure that like Cold War style with like nuclear weapons, like make sure there's not.
She gives him a chatbot. It's like, this is me.
You imagine those two
going deep on AI for a minute.
Yeah, no shit. Yeah. But I would like our country cooperating with China on making sure that we're keeping a line open on AI when it gets kind of scary.
Yeah. I talked to Bernie about it. Was it last week? Feels like time flies. But like, there's obviously a space between like hamstringing whatever advantage we think we have and allowing just sort of unfettered development. Like, there clearly would be some kind of, there's a way to have an agreement about some kind of limits to prevent sort of catastrophic outcomes with AI. And like, that seems like exactly what we would want them to be working towards. And they said they were going to talk about it. So I, think, yeah. I do think that's genuinely
sure they'll end that place.
There's not AI the nukes, the nuclear decision-making process, no AI on that.
Yeah, and they have both agreed so far to split that off. Yeah. Of, but there's a lot more. There's
lock that down.
Plenty of other problems that could end the world. You know, bioweapons, all the rest of it. All right. We haven't had a chance to talk about the shitty news we got on Friday about Virginia, where the state Supreme Court overturned the referendum that voters just passed to create new congressional maps ahead of the midterms. Tommy and Dan covered the news when it broke on the PSA YouTube channel.
I have to say we crushed it.
That's why you should go subscribe for free.
Subscribe to Pods of America on YouTube.
Free.
If you want to see Dan looking spicy on a Friday.
Okay.
He does most of the YouTubes. He pops the top.
Wow. Oh, he does. Wow. Topless YouTube. Is that Friday?
Yeah,
for Friday.
And then under the table camera, that's for the subscribers.
For the subs.
Talk about a polar coaster.
You're Dom. You want to be a sub?
Nice.
Anyway.
Nobody put this in the comments on message box. That's the only way Dan will know this happened. Everybody be fucking cool. Fucking narcs.
Oh, anyway, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. There's been some more developments on the potential redistricting fallout in Virginia and other states ahead of the midterms. Here's glass half empty. Nate Cohn, of course, calculated that Republicans could now lose the popular vote by more than 2 points and still keep control of the House. Then there's glass half full. Jonathan Martin is out with a column arguing that Republicans still might lose many of the newly drawn districts, which by definition will be more competitive. Amy Walter at Cook Political basically said the same thing. I think you guys probably talked about that on Friday, mm-hmm. I imagine. I think she thinks that when all is said and done, the realistic gain is probably like 5 seats in a good scenario.
Yeah, they could net like 11 or 12, but probably won't, was her take.
And that's because of the Democrats still winning those tough districts, not because they would still get to redraw them. And J-Mart argues that they're handing Democrats a generational opportunity to mobilize outraged black voters. Case in point, Republican Representative Ralph Norman said on Monday about the state's lone Democratic Congressman Jim Clyburn, who's one of the longest serving black members in the House, quote, "I like him personally, but he does not represent the rest of South Carolina." Wow. Well, that's, you know,
Jesus.
That is part of the point of representing one district in a state, is you represent some people in the state and not all the people in the state. How are you guys processing the news generally and specifically on the question of whether this is all as bad as people think? And on that point, some breaking news while we were recording this.
What?
The U.S. Supreme Court did rule. They lifted the injunction on Alabama that they had in place before, now allowing them to pursue their new maps in
Shocking.
That state.
See, those dickheads, they voted forward their new, you know, map proposal in the middle of a tornado warning.
Mm-hmm.
They just kept going. They're supposed to evacuate. They're like, no. Stripping away black people's voting rights is more important to us.
So what do you guys think? How bad?
So, seen a couple different numbers, but basically, even with these new maps, if we have, you know, if we win by, let's say, 4%, right, nationally, the House margin is 4%, then we still win the House. I get
that's an important one, just to put an exclamation point on that, because that was if Louisiana, Alabama, and South Carolina all go, which now seems like we are definitely headed toward that scenario. And they say if we won the popular vote by 4 in that scenario, Democrats still win the House.
Right. And so I'm all for doing like a round of worry and recrimination. But I would say that in this political environment, the deeper problem would be not having confidence that against a president with this approval rating, with both kind of on the politics and on the policy, has been as bad a president as you could ever imagine, as destructive a force as you can ever imagine, enabled directly by Republicans who deserve to be held responsible for this president's misadventures, we ought to be able to beat that 4%. And we should focus on that, because if we do that, then not only do we overcome their advantages in the gerrymander, we can win those Virginia seats that on the old map, and we can actually prove that some of their maps were drawn too aggressively and make them more nervous the next time they look at doing this to try to redraw the maps, because the Republican incumbents will start to think, oh, if there's even a slight wave, I could lose my seat.
Yeah. I mean, Democrats won the House popular vote by 8 in 2018. So if we're thinking and hoping and expecting this cycle to be better than even 2018, then we should have no problem in the House. And look, if we're not winning by 8, if we're only winning by 4, then something else went wrong.
Exactly. And by the
more
way,
than redistricting. If after, like you said, if after all this, Democrats win by 4 or 5 or 6 in this kind of year, and so do worse than we did in 2018.
Maybe they like the ballroom.
Maybe they like the ballroom. You know, maybe they like the ballroom. Maybe they like $5 gas.
Yeah.
Or $6. Maybe people were like upset they had so much money left over after they filled up their tank.
Yeah, people hate it. They hate having all the options with what to do with the money. But yeah, and I'd also say if this does galvanize people and we are able to win the House, suddenly you have people showing up in these Senate races that might not have otherwise. And it sort of, you know, Republicans can be hoisted by their own petards.
Yeah. Nate Cohn points out that the challenge is the median district, House district now in the country will have voted for Trump by 5.5 points.
Sweet.
So that means to win back the majority, you're winning a lot of, not all, but you have to win some significant amount of seats that, you know, Trump won by 5.5 points.
Look, it's
which we've already been doing in every
The swings from 24 to these specials have been like on average, I think 13 points. You know, These are base elections. Democrats are already more motivated. Hopefully, they will all learn about this, be angry about it, be even more motivated to turn out. And the good thing about Trump is he just. Things are as bad as they've ever been for him politically. And he's like, give me a shovel. I'm not done digging. $1 billion ballroom, $1.5 trillion Pentagon budget. Let me drive my stupid car on a fountain for some reason. Yeah. He's just like wasting his time on stupid shit.
And look, the bigger long-term problem here that will outlast Trump is the concentrated power of the state legislatures in red states, which they have because they have gerrymandered their state legislative districts in such a crazy fashion. And in many cases, like in North Carolina, know that if the full state elects a Democrat as governor, which happens in places like North Carolina, Wisconsin, then the state legislature, which never has to worry about competitive elections or Republicans losing, just takes all the power away from the
power,
governor.
Yeah.
So really like good. At some point, whatever Project 2029, whatever long-term thing we're doing, like we have to figure out a way to win back power in some of these state legislatures in some of these southern states and other heavily Republican states that have gerrymandered themselves on a state level, forget about the federal level, into such a place. And we know from the Constitution, right, that it you know, endows state legislatures with a lot of power when it comes with elections.
Certain inalienable rights like life.
Like that, yeah. But that is, you know. And on that note, if Democrats do control Virginia, I don't know if you guys saw the mini news cycle about Virginia Democrats considering whether to.
It was a mini news cycle.
It's over.
It's like a mini war.
We talked about this morning. It's already over. Yeah. Anyway, they were considering whether to change the retirement age for state Supreme Court justices. So to bring it down in order to get rid of all the state Supreme Court justices on the Virginia Supreme Court and appoint new ones in time to. Change the maps and then have the new democratically appointed Democratic Party appointed state Supreme Court justices approve the new maps and in time for the midterms.
First,
they'd have to get a bunch of new, they'd have to replace those justices because they've been retired by the government at the age of, I think, in decrepit 54.
I mean, first of all, shout out for creativity.
Points for creativity.
Some local news outlet in Virginia floated this idea, and all of a sudden we're talking about it.
Another thing says a golden retriever can't be Speaker of the House situation.
It is without a doubt an undemocratic, terrible precedent, the kind of thing that voters would absolutely despise in this climate. Absolutely would do it. 100% appropriate.
You know, the governor of Louisiana is just talking about on TV how he's like throwing out ballots and he's like, it's not my fault. It's Supreme Court's fault. Now, it's like you did cancel an election.
Do we really think Governor Spanberger would have wanted to, you know, kind of hemorrhage all the political capital she'd built up with independent Republican voters doing this early on? I doubt it. I bet she has other things she wants to do.
Did you see Greg Sargent's piece in the New Republic on this? They're not doing it. So May 12th, which is the day you're listening to this, that is the deadline set by the Department of Elections for having congressional maps in the system in time for early voting in June ahead of the August primary. So they couldn't pass the law to lower the retirement age, to get rid of all the judges, to appoint all the new judges, to redraw the maps, to send it back to court.
Because
the technology is so old, it takes a lot of time to input new districts into the computers. The computers.
If we lose fucking...
Are we putting the maps like... Are we like feeding it like a fax machine?
Yeah, is it punch cards? Like, I don't know what we're doing. Like, how big... Is it a room? Does it overheat? Like, I don't understand.
Get Claude?
But the idea that we could potentially lose the House because
Claude.
The computers...
Claude, can you help in Virginia?
The computers...
If called upon.
The Virginia government's computers are too slow to be a democracy. That's where the potential.
Did Greg Sargent just call an old person by accident, like a Luddite who doesn't know?
I think it was like the guy that runs the state Senate.
Oh, that's bad.
He was the one that was saying the deadline. Yeah, I think no. He got a real guy on the phone. No, it was, I don't think Greg Sargent got by like AI or anything. He was talking to a real person. But that guy was like, hey, listen,
it was Scruff.
Yeah, love the idea. It was love
Damn
the
it,
idea.
Scruff.
Love your idea. Yeah, I mean, look, my take on it was Grux okay,
drawing bikinis on all the state legislators in Virginia,
on all the districts. All the districts have just magnificent yabos.
Look at these cannons. Look at these
okay, cannons. It's just so we yeah. Virginia State Senate Majority Leader Scott Servais.
Yeah, I just meant was he old and doesn't know computers?
No. That's fair. But I just want to. I refuse to Google it. Yeah.
I'm calling him the Jim Comey of fucking Virginia. No, I don't think that's fair. No, look, the thing about it is
86. That idea.
Every guy, he's the one who picked up the phone. Yeah, right? Called.
Yeah, never.
The phone.
Don't make that. You know,
could have been Spanberger. She didn't pick up the phone.
Yeah. Smart. No.
Guess that's why she's governor.
Yeah. I'm not taking that fucking call. Oh, the crazy. We'll get rid of all the judges because the democracy.
Red wing judges.
To save democracy, I've gotten rid of all the judges. They're worse than us. Everybody, get behind me. We're going. Come on.
Gavin Newsom's breathing down her neck.
Yeah. Gavin Newsom, we could have
like,
all
I put him on a raft
reps.
And send him off to fucking Hawaii.
That fucking institutional fucking fag. We could have had all Democratic districts. What kind of coward was he?
Why is Gavin Newsom such a coward?
Yeah,
put that out there.
No, but
the, just kidding, Gavin.
Just kidding. But
governor,
if you told me right now that there's no time issue, we don't know what the future holds. We can still win the House. We should fight to win the House. Yes, this made it harder, but the idea that like if we knew like with certainty that our only path to having some check on Trump was doing this.
Was updating the machines.
Was updating the machines.
Was the software.
Was buying a new laptop. Was Tim Cook's software update.
Updating the fucking, updating
he's not going
to
give me now.
Updating to Sierra 15.2 so we can upload the map so the new judges that are young and vital, just the 32-year-old new Democratic judges could approve the map. I'd be like, okay, I get it. Maybe it's worth the risk reward.
Second year Yale's.
But everything can get worse. And look, I believe Republicans are leading us down all these escalatory paths all along the way, every step of the way. But this would be a new one, and it would be on us.
Yeah, it'd be a big deal.
Here's
where I'm
going to
be upset about Democrats is it is clear that any state where Democrats have control, either of the governorship or the governorship and ideally the state legislature, if we do not act to maximize the number of seats that we win between now and 28, because this cycle has clearly already passed
us by. Which Virginia will have a chance to do.
Right, which Virginia will have to do. If you decide to take a pass on that, yeah, then you're fucked. But like, I expect New York, Virginia, and Colorado better get in the act. Minnesota can, I believe, Wisconsin can, Maryland Illinois. I think can squeeze out another one. At yeah, Illinois,
but J.B. Pritzker probably won't be bulldozing the courthouses. You know, yeah, I'm guessing that's not going to be
right. Yeah, no. The problem is the Virginia State Constitution, Commonwealth, that gives you know the legislature the authority to appoint the judges, and gives them certain terms so that you get a bunch of Republicans. I mean, it's actually probably fair for democracy. It's
no,
probably,
I actually
be great
was looking,
for the, it'd
I,
be great for the country,
they can,
but
they can't. They can expand from 7 to 11 seats. Is you need actually like a super majority in the legislature, I think, to prevent this exact scenario.
Sounds like a good model for America, actually.
Right. One would think.
But again, we have to do things as a country.
Yeah,
and not as individual states, which is why you need to eliminate gerrymandering as a country.
Now, back in this quarter, what?
Can you guys make about a decision? To say, the U.S. Constitution does not require any specifics on expanding the number of justices on the Supreme Court, and that is just a custom. And the Biden administration ever finish that report? Whether we should do, where were we on
good
that?
Poll.
Hey, where were we in that report?
Yeah, you know,
I think they did. Put
it's
it
on
out.
It's on Merrick Garland's to-do list.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah. Pod Save America is brought to you by Hims. ED is way more common than most guys think. Millions of guys deal with it at some point, and that's exactly why Hims offers a straightforward way to handle it. Hims connects you with licensed healthcare providers online, giving you simple access to legitimate ED treatment options from home. No awkward appointments, no pharmacy lines, just complete a simple online intake, and a provider will review your information to determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment will ship directly to your door in discreet packaging that includes sildenafil, also known as generic for Viagra, available through Hims at up to 95% less than the brand name version. And if that option isn't right for you, there are additional treatment options available so you can find what works best for your body. It's straightforward, transparent, and designed to make getting care feel easy. To get simple online access to personalized, affordable care for ED, weight loss, and more, visit Hims.com/crooked. That's Hims.com/crooked for your free online visit. Hims.com/crooked. Prescription required. See website for details and important safety information. Sildenafil is the generic version of Viagra. Viagra is a registered trademark of Viatris Specialty LLC. Hims is not affiliated with or endorsed by Viatris.
I'm Dan Pfeiffer. For years, I've heard from candidates, activists, and political staffers who turn to PodSafe America for political strategy and messaging advice because they don't have access to a political consultant or a pollster. That's flattering to hear, but it's a huge problem. If we're going to defeat MAGA and protect democracy, we need everyone to have access to the best information and advice possible. That's why I recently launched MessageBox Pro, a subscription consulting product for people working at every level of politics. Subscribers get weekly strategy memos, data-driven messaging insights, and polling analysis. Plus, you get access to an incredible community of smart, committed political pros. Whether you're running for office, staffing a politician, organizing your community, or working in communications at any level, MessageBox Pro is built for you. To learn more or sign up, go to messageboxpro.com.
All right. Anyway, why worry about 2026 when we can speculate about 2028?
Nice.
AOC made some news over the weekend when she sat down with our pal David Axelrod at the University of Chicago Institute of Politics. Boy, was there an event that was just designed for us.
Yeah.
Ax at the IOP with interviewing AOC. Good times.
We reviewed the IOP tape and I'll tell you all about it. No?
Yeah, pretty good.
2017 joke.
Where she provided the Terminally Online Among Us plenty of content to engage with, as people have been over the last couple of days. There was one response in particular she gave to the age-old question of whether she's planning on running for president or Senate in 2028, we should talk about, in which she answered by pivoting to a Washington Post editorial last week going after her for saying that it's impossible to become a billionaire without breaking rules and abusing workers or paying them not what they're worth. Take a listen.
It was very clear this was a veiled threat. Right? So the elite saying, if you want this job, you just stepped out of line. They assume that my ambition is positional. They assume that my ambition is a title or a seat. And my ambition is way bigger than that. My ambition is to change this country. Presidents come and go. Senate, House seats, elected officials come and go. But single-payer healthcare is forever. A living wage is forever. Workers' rights are forever. Women's rights, all of that.
Wish this president would come and go a little faster.
Yeah.
What'd you guys think? I thought it was in terms of non-answers to questions about, are you going to run for president? That's one of the better.
Yeah, I mean, they went to the crowd to a guy named Chuck Schumer, who was like, answer the question.
Yeah, we've all heard a million politicians duck that question. And usually it's some version of like, I'm not thinking about that right now. My priorities are on the state of Virginia or my calendar. You know, it's like she made it bigger. She made it about what she wanted to do, the people she wanted to help. I thought that was nice. It was well done. Now, the nitpicking response that we kind of hinted at is legislative accomplishments are more durable, but they're not forever. The Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade, but I think that's a little too literal.
Yeah.
We all know.
I feel like we
would
have written the line
here.
Forever, and then like the policy nerds or the lawyers would have been like, more durable is more more accurate, which is correct. It would have been more accurate to say that.
Yeah, almost.
ACA is still hanging on.
Nearly forever. Yeah, by the skin of its teeth.
That's right.
Knock on wood.
I did think it was completely wild to have a Washington Post editorial, not a column, but an entire editorial from the Ed Board, owned by Jeff Bezos, being like, hey, stop picking on billionaires.
It's so funny. Well, he's like, I'm going to redo the editorial board so that it focuses on free markets and not attacking success. And it's like, you know, promises made, promises kept, I guess, on what that editorial board would do, yeah.
I watched the whole thing, though. I'd never heard her talk about the specific experience of going from candidate to overnight celebrity. Mm. That was a really interesting story.
Yeah, that's it.
And how just like head spinning and insane that was. And then the part about what, did you hear the story about why she didn't go to med school? Like her dad got sick, passed away actually, and her mom started cancer, working all these jobs. I mean, it's not just like the bartending story that makes her feel like more of a human being than any other politician. It's the very recent past and economic hardship shit. I don't know. It's just a very compelling event. It was worth watching the full hour, I think.
Yeah. I will say that the whole conversation about should billionaires exist to me is not the most productive use of time. On either side of the debate, because it's like, here's the thing about billionaires. I just want to make sure that they are taxed appropriately. I want to make sure that they can't use their influence and power to change the laws and have a bigger megaphone than everyone else in the country just because they're rich. But like, it seems like an academic dorm room debate to be like, should they exist? Should they not exist? If they exist, does that mean that they broke the law or not broke the law? Like, I don't know why we need to be debating that in the first place.
I feel like it's, I was thinking about, there was something about the online debate that was very frustrating to me because there's a lot of people talking past
There's a few aspects of the online debate that we can get into, but we can start with the billionaires one.
And I was trying to figure out what was bugging me about it. And it is, I think, because you end up in this conversation in which the terms are moral and fuzzy, terms like earned, legitimate, deserved. And those are, because moral language. And I actually think the debate over the kind of morality of who can amass vast sums of wealth and how they do it is not like, I think it's more than academic. I think the way we have it is academic, but what was interesting to me is the response. Like, it is absurd that Jeff Bezos' paper is writing a defense of billionaires. And what was interesting about the defense is they always land on celebrities like Taylor Swift and Seinfeld and people
likeable
like,
people.
Well, likeable people and people that, like, you know, nobody had to pee in a bottle for Taylor Swift to write the music, right? Like, nobody had to sew sneakers with their little hands, right? So like
you see that documentary about the Eras Tour?
How many children were working those gears?
It seems like she had to pee in a few bottles.
Maybe Scooter Braun
pissed himself a couple times. That girl.
But it's like, oh, because they really earned it. And what the kind of underlying defense of it is like, well, Taylor Swift, by dint of talent, without exploitation, created more than $1 billion worth of value. And like, I think I largely agree with that. But where I kind of, what they are talking past the deeper argument, which is a system in which one person can accrue all that wealth. Like, even Taylor Swift, like, she's protected by intellectual property law. She's been able to take her vehicles on the roads and all the rest. And it's not about like the righteousness or the morality to me. Like, that's just not what I care about. I think it matters a lot in politics. It's like a system in which those benefits accrue so much is both wrong on the front end and the back end, the incentive structure and power structure of the economy, and then the tax structure on the back end. And so whether billionaires should or should not exist, if a lot of them do, it is because something is fundamentally broken in the system and they have the ability to exploit that wealth that has kind of also wrecked our politics. And like, that to me is what makes it worth having.
Yeah. And for me, that brings us to, like, all right, so what are the policy considerations here? What rules and laws are we going to put into place to make sure that the system is more fair?
How do we tax wealth?
And it goes into regulations and lobbying influence and all the corruption stuff as well, right? There's all that. I think about Ruben Gallego and what he would always say after the 2024 election is that Democrats with Latino voters failed the big ass truck test, and that people in this country want to be rich. Working class people want to be rich. And do they all want to be billionaires, or do they think they can be billionaires? No, but they want to be wealthy. And what they just want is to like have a, you know, fair playing field, whatever you want to call it, whatever cliche you want to bring out. But like, people want to make a lot of money, and they also want to make sure that people who are absurdly rich, like, pay their fair share in taxes and don't have more power and influence than everyone else.
Yeah, but I think like Democrats end up focusing on the tax side of it and not as much on like the deeper kind of like structures that mean individuals, like whether they have a union or not, whether they have other protections, like, let's say, non-competes and things like that, all of which like kind of mean, as all the productivity gains are sort of going up to the top, which means the individual has less negotiating and bargaining power than they used to, and their dollar doesn't go as far because of all of our failures across like housing and all the rest. And to me, like, those are the questions that I think Democrats struggle the most to answer. We have the least compelling answer on like upriver from the taxes.
One last thing we have to talk about. Gas prices may be $4.50 a gallon, but Transportation Secretary and Road Rules All-Stars veteran Sean Duffy really wants you to get out and take a road trip, so much so that he and his wife and 9 children have been apparently doing their own road trip over the last several months, which they've documented in a Gazi documentary series premiering soon on YouTube. Duffy's wife, Fox News host and fellow Real World and Road Rules star Rachel Campos Duffy, that's where they met, described the project as really wholesome, good family stuff that's an antidote to the, quote, Pornhub world we're living in.
The fuck kind of road trip did she go on?
Well, she was on Real World. I can never say Real World Road Rules Challenge.
Yeah, it's a tongue twister.
Anyway, here's a here's a clip.
What a beautiful family.
Hi, can I say hi to Mr. President? Can I say hi to the President Trump?
We're inviting you along with our family on the Great American Road Trip.
The Duffys, they've got tons of kids. I think they have like 11 kids.
Nine
or 11 something. Is there a difference?
Before Kid Rock became Kid Rock, you're traveling all over the country. You're
basically an Aerostar van.
Dad's Real World House. If I never lived in this house, none of you would be here.
Was that...
That looks so boring.
Was that antidote to Pornhub or no?
Well, I mean...
You got a lot of kids. So, something's working.
All right.
That's so many. First of all, you can't road trip with nine kids. What are we driving? Is it a school bus? Because that looked like a little car.
Nine kids.
So we're just leaving them behind?
Nine kids is a lot of kids.
Also, bullshit that they're really driving around the country. They're flying places and then driving around and filming it, right? We assume?
Yes. You think the moon landing was fake?
No.
You might be wondering who paid for this massive boondoggle. 501c4 called the Great American Road Trip, Inc., which says it fully funds its own efforts to celebrate and share America's story, and whose sponsors happen to be industries with a business in front of the Department of Transportation. So that's
surprise.
Helpful. And the department later confirmed that taxpayer dollars paid for the secretary's travel to a bunch of the stops, but not his family's. And the whole thing is official business anyway, because he's the transportation secretary and he was doing some transportation there, I guess.
That doesn't mean your job is driving.
Right.
Dude, remember when the planes were all crashing and like Sean Duffy was the guy who was going to fix it? Well, I just watched a guy get hit on the runway in Denver the other day. I don't know. Maybe don't road trip around so much.
Look, you know, this would bug me less if A, they didn't have a bunch of sponsors who have business in front of the Department of Transportation. That's
and if they were Democrats, right, John?
Well, no, I was actually gonna say
classic.
You know who fucking wouldn't stop talking about Pete Buttigieg and criticizing Pete and Chastain? Rachel Campos Duffy, when they spent 2 months when Pete took 2 months paternity leave because the twins were in the NICU.
Yeah, they were.
And she criticized him for that. And so it's like, okay, and now you're going to go do this?
It's crazy to film a 7-month reality show.
They said that he like popped in for a day here and a day there. But it's like, whatever, if he wants to do it on his days off, it's not, none of these people are fucking doing a good job anyway in the cabinet. It's all a grift.
I would say, though, he's one guy.
Not my Sean.
Yeah, he's one guy where it's like, dude, like you got like real legitimate ongoing like management problems at your department.
Yeah. And if Butt Rocket Duffy can't fix it, who can? You know, that's what his nickname was in the real world?
Butt Rocket? Why was it that?
Because he would run around the house streaking and mooning people. There's
the rocket. I remember he did a front moon, I think, too. Yeah. Out a window in one of the episodes.
Huh. Butt
speaking
Rocket.
Of, who else was on that show? Cyrus?
Rachel was, yeah. Rachel Campos is.
Boston's a pretty good series.
There's so much reality. I don't begrudge him his youth.
I don't either. There's too much reality TV.
Butt Rocket's a great name.
Butt Rocket, sure. Trump, Sean Duffy, Spencer Pratt torturing us in the mayoral race here. Like all these annoying reality people are just popping back up and ruining the 2026.
Sean Duffy, I defended you as one of the lesser offenses in terms of actual cabinet performance so far. And that remains the case
because the bar is so low.
But
there's a rough.
This is tough. I also look, as a rule, like if someone's producing their own reality show, it's just more boring. Mm-hmm. That's just how it goes. Mm-hmm. You got the only reality shows like, oh, it's wholesome. Like what would you think that's why people go to BravoCon? No, they want to watch these bitches throw shit, you know, and get into it.
He was also a lumberjack.
Yeah.
We're gonna chop some wood. Is that part of the Pornhub thing?
Mm-hmm. No? He was a lumberjack?
Oh yeah.
Wow. I didn't know that.
That was a part of the Real World Boston thing.
Yeah.
Huh.
That's right. That was his shtick. That and Butt Rocket. Hmm.
I don't remember Butt Rocket.
I'll send you the video. I thought that was an old joke that was gonna be like, I've said it too many times.
Flagging that he was briefly NASA administrator, you guys remember that?
Yeah.
He wanted to keep the job.
Get some other rockets up there. You know? He's got the expertise. He has a history of he's worked with all kinds of rockets.
Anyway, is that it? That's it. That's our show for today, everyone.
Yeah,
it was a good one. Gusher of a show. Dan and I are going to be back with a new show on Friday. So you want to check that out?
I think we started. This is a new ending. This is a new end segment of Pod Save America. I want to apologize for calling Gavin Newsom a woke. I want to apologize for suggesting that removing the gas tax would cause Chuck Schumer to come. I think I regret saying that or implying it. Now I regret saying it.
It was ass rocket. Sorry.
Well,
same thing. I was just being family friendly.
Steel pickup.
Uh-huh. Took his rocket.
Unlike me.
Took his rocket.
Yeah. A real rump rocket. That's something, that's something different. Speaking of Tim Cook going to China.
What?
Oh, fuck.
I don't know, man.
End the show. We're out. Credits.
Positive America is a Crooked Media production. Our show is produced by Austin Fisher, Saul Rubin, McKenna Roberts, and Farrah Safari, with Reed Cherlin, Elijah Cohn, and Adrian Hill. Our team includes Matt DeGroat, Ben Hethcote, Jordan Cantor, Charlotte Landis, Kirill Pelaviv, David Tolles, Mia Kelman, Ryan Young, and Naomi Single. Our staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
I'm Dan Pfeiffer. For years, I've heard from candidates, activists, and political staffers who turn to Pod Save America for political strategy and messaging advice because they don't have access to a political consultant or a pollster. That's flattering to hear, but it's a huge problem. If we're going to defeat MAGA and protect democracy, we need everyone to have access to the best information and advice possible. That's why I recently launched MessageBox Pro, a subscription consulting product for people working at every level of politics. Subscribers get weekly strategy memos, data-driven messaging insights, and polling analysis. Plus, you get access to an incredible community of smart, committed political pros. Whether you're running for office, staffing a politician, organizing your community, or working in communications at any level, MessageBox Pro is built for you. To learn more or sign up, go to messageboxpro.com.